Hello and welcome to Rhythm and Brews. It's the first episode of 2018, so we thought we'd do a album of the year episode. Every once in a while we'll do sort of a guest profile where we have a guest come on and talk about an album that is important to them or ties into their theme. So today I have my wife, Katrina Kat, from the Conquest podcast, joining us to talk about her favorite album of 2017. Thanks for being here, Kat.
Thanks for having me.
So Kat, tell us your album of the year, your album of 2017.
So my album of 2017 was Paramore's After Laughter. Came out back in May, and I've listened to it at least once a week since then.
So what are you using as your sort of criteria for what? Why is this album of the year for you?
So we've talked about this concept before of start to finish albums, those ones that you can just put it on and let it go and you don't have to skip any songs, and every one you're just like super into and the whole album resonates with you. And that's one of those albums for me. I listened to it when it first came out on repeat, like nonstop, for maybe 2 weeks, and didn't get sick of it at all. Didn't skip any songs, just let it play right through, sang along to every word. It just like immediately grew on me, and I knew that it was going to be one of my favorites.
And it has that re-listen value to it. So is it safe to say you've probably listened to this album more than any other album last year?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. Well, we'll get into it some more. We'll kind of go through some of your favorite tracks. But before we do that, let's do our BYOBs. We're doing album of the year, so we're kind of doing beer of the year here. Mm-hmm. You want to tell us what you brought for?
So I have New Belgium's Citradelic Tangerine IPA. I've mentioned before, I'm usually not a huge IPA fan, but this one has that fruity tangerine flavor to it. I really like IPAs that bring in those fruitier, citrusy flavors to balance out the hoppiness of them. And this one I instantly fell in love with, and I was like, all right, I have an IPA that I like, and it became really hard to find. So I was actually at a local craft beer store a couple weeks ago, and I spotted a six pack of it, and I was like, I need to get this before I never find it again.
Yeah, I've never seen you be that way before, where like this is the only beer I've ever seen you buy every time you find it.
Mm-hmm.
So I can definitely attest to this being like the beer of the year for you.
Yeah.
Like finally discovering an IPA that you like.
Mm-hmm.
I brought a beer that I've mentioned before. It's Weihenstephaner's Hef. It's my favorite wheat beer in the world. Just kind of a Bavarian style wheat beer from one of the oldest breweries in the world. It's very refreshing. I can drink it all year round. I think it may be my favorite beer of all time, if not close to it. And certainly the one that I drink the most and drank the most last year. I talk a lot about loving Belgian beers. And if I had to pick my all-time favorite beer, it probably would be something like Le Chouf. But this is a little bit more drinkable because it's not quite as strong, not quite as heavy, and always delicious. So shall we?
Shall. I can also attest to this one always being in the fridge at all times.
I don't know if I necessarily buy it every time I see it at a liquor store. It's probably a little bit more common than that.
Yeah.
Than the Citradelic, but if I know I need a smooth, drinkable beer, it's easily the go-to for me. All right, well, let's get into After Laughter. I also really enjoy this album, and I think it's safe to say we've both been Paramore fans for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
How far back does that go for you?
So mine probably only goes back as far as Riot, which is like 2008, 2007, 2008,
sounds about right,
around
yeah.
there. That was my first exposure to them. And I was super into pop punk, probably starting like my eighth grade year. Blink-182, we were all into pop punk at that time.
Yeah, yeah.
So that kind of evolved, and I was like, awesome, this is a pop punk band, they have a lead singer that's a girl, she's really spunky, these songs are super catchy, and that just immediately got me into them. And Riot is another one where I listened to it start to finish and like instantly clicked with me.
Yeah.
So that one really resonated with me and was in my regular rotation for a long time. We've had many debates about this. Wasn't such a huge fan of their follow-up to that, Brand New Eyes.
Yeah.
But then their self-title came out and I love that record as well. And then After Laughter, I think, is like one of their tightest, most creative albums for me.
Yeah, I agree. And it's also a very different album for them. Mm-hmm. They've had definitely kind of an evolution over the years. Like you said, Riot is more or less a pop punk album. The mm-hmm. album before it is very, has some pop punk influence, but also has a lot of influence from bands like Thursday, mm-hmm. a lot of kind of old, not old school, but some emo influence yeah. to it. And then Brand New Eyes, I think, is more in the Riot vein, but they're trying to move away from like radio pop. And that's why right. you didn't hear as much of it on there. And they kind of went totally the other direction with their self-titled, with songs like Fast in My Car and...
Ain't It Fun?
Ain't It Fun.
Yeah, that one's a great one.
Yeah, that was like their huge radio hit. And it kind of has like there are maybe two or three songs on that album that have kind of a pop punk feel that makes you kind of think of their old stuff. But otherwise, it is a departure. It's still definitely a rock album, but it's yeah. more in like a conventional pop direction. And then this album is even more so pretty much sheds that all together. There might yeah. be maybe one or two songs that you can kind of tie or draw a line from their older stuff too, but for the most part it's very kind of dance rock,
it's very new wave influenced,
a lot of Duran yeah. influence there. And so I think the fact that you just mentioned these two albums, this one and Riot, as both being albums that you can go back to and that you listen to over and over and over again.
And they're very different.
And being very different is a testament to their ability to write songs that are engaging regardless of the style, and for them to be able to evolve without alienating their fans.
Yeah, I was actually thinking about this the other day, because a lot of times when bands evolve their sound to such an almost extreme degree, a lot of fans will have backlash. They're like, this album, this is not the same band. What are they doing? This is crazy. Like, if you listen to really early Coldplay and then recent Coldplay, I don't really like a lot of their newer stuff because it feels so different from where they started. And I could say the same thing about After Laughter compared to like All We Know Is Falling or Riot. And I still love it just as much, and I don't think any less of them as a band. And I think that's a testament to their songwriting ability and just their ability to recognize their own evolution and carry that string throughout all their albums, ultimately building up to this instead of it feeling like an extreme shift.
Yeah, totally. I think that the example you just gave of Coldplay, that is because I don't think Coldplay's new material is as solid from a songwriting perspective as their old stuff. And the fact, that their material is still just as good after all these years makes it that much more impressive.
Mm-hmm.
I always talk about how I think most bands get two great albums and that's it. And I think these guys kind of defy that a little bit. I think every one of their albums, I don't think they're going to go down in history like with the Beatles or anything right. like that. But I really enjoy their music, and I really enjoy how their style has shifted over the years. One thing we haven't even touched on yet is how fucking great her voice is.
It's incredible.
It's so great too, because a lot of the people that you hear who are great singers these days are either like full on pop acts or R&B acts. And so to have somebody who's just like a virtuosic rock singer is really rare these days, yeah. and something that is really cool to see.
And her voice just seems so effortless. You can just tell that like it comes naturally to her. She's having a good time. It's very heartfelt. It doesn't feel like she's ever straining or reaching. It's just, these are her songs and she's going to sing them.
Absolutely. Let me play Hard Times. That was the lead single off the album. And I think it just gives a real feel of the kind of dance rock style we were talking about a second ago. I remember when we first heard this, I think it was when we were in Italy last year or this year.
Yeah.
Wow. Last year.
Yeah.
Last April. And I remember feeling like, right from the get-go, that guitar riff Very kind of very 80s feel, but it's super exciting and it immediately draws you in and her voice works with it.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel jarring like you might imagine it would, being such a departure.
Yeah, it really does work well, and I think because some of her influences being Blondie and Susie from Susie and the Banshees, like she has that pop punk with that 80s already built into her repertoire. Like she, that's where she draws from. So to go to this naturally as her evolution in music and have the band go to this place as their evolution, they feel at home, and you can sense that in this album, I think.
Yeah, you sense from them a confidence in the new material. Like they're not like trying it out and seeing, do you guys like this? Or, you know, they're just like, this is what we're doing now and we're kicking ass at it. I remember we saw them earlier this year and they opened with this song. Yeah. And I just remember immediately being like, they fucking nailed that.
Yeah.
They were so tight and they just, it was such a great way to start the show. And usually you would expect, especially with a departure like this, you'd expect a band to maybe start off with a big upbeat old song that everyone would know just to set the tone. They're confident enough in this song and their ability to knock it out of the park that they're like, let's just open it up with this.
Yeah, and it's such an upbeat song, just musically. And what I think is great about this album in general is that if you just listen to just the music, you're like, this is a great dance record. But then when you actually listen to a lot of the lyrics, they contrast with how upbeat the music is, because they're all about anxiety and depression and exhaustion and just like reaching those parts of yourself that you have tried to avoid, and just recognizing them and coming to grips with that part of growing up and being an adult.
Yeah, I'd say thematically it's their heaviest album to date for sure.
But you never know just by casually listening to it.
There's a lot of stuff on like Brand New Eyes that is, that it's heavy to a degree because I think she's changing her image a little bit. And I love this part, so I want to just shut up for a second. I wasn't sure how they were going to do this live, but they nailed it. But Brand New Eyes has a lot of stuff about like not wanting to be judged and kind of feeling like other members in the band were making her feel that way.
Yeah.
So there definitely is some heaviness there, but this, it gets into depression territory a lot more. And I think actually I'll play this song just to give a sense of that really raw sense of depression that kind of ties through the album, even in some of the more upbeat songs. This is definitely a departure style-wise from the rest of the album in that it's I think it's just an acoustic guitar.
Yeah.
But her voice sounds great on it. I think it's a great chorus.
Yeah. She got pretty emotional when she did this one live.
Well, she's pretty fresh out of a divorce, isn't she?
Yeah, I think they announced their split in July, and the divorce just became final. They were only married for like a year and a half.
Really?
Yeah, they were together for 10 years, like total, or 9 years total, but only married for a year and a half. And what's interesting about a lot of this album, too, is she's going through that separation from her husband, but a reunion with the Faro brothers, and having Zach back on this album and back in the band officially. So she's dealing with loss and reunion at the same time. And that's like a huge mixture of emotions, especially for such like heavy relationships in her life.
That's really interesting context. I hadn't thought about that, but there is a lot of lyrical content around reconciliation, and it's often not clear whether it's with band members or her ex, or, you know.
Yeah, because they seem like they parted on pretty amicable terms. Because even when After Laughter came out, her ex-husband was raving about it and just how proud he was of her and how excellent it is as an album. So you can sense that there's like still admiration and respect there, even though their marriage didn't work. And even though she gets some very personal lyrical content on here, he still praises her for it and for the honesty.
Let's go back to something upbeat because I'm going to like slip my wrist right now. This is probably my favorite track on the album, Rose Colored Boy.
Yeah, this one's
another
a fun
one in that kind of 80s dance style.
Yeah.
Like this could be straight off of, I don't know, a Duran Duran album.
Yeah. Her name is Haley and she dances in the sand.
And that's the thing that I think has stuck with me about them over the years is their hook writing ability.
Yeah.
Every album, they just know how to write songs that are earworms and hook you from start to finish. Catchy verses that go into fuck you in the face choruses.
Yeah.
And they never seem to run out of steam.
That's what kept me coming back to this album, because every time I listened to it, I'd have something new stuck in my head and it would just be stuck in my head all day. And I'm like, I need to listen to this song again. So I'd put it on and I'm like, well, it's already on, so I'm just going to let it run through.
Yeah, it is one of those albums that like it could, you end it, it automatically restarts and you're like, who cares?
Yeah, it's fine.
Let's just leave it on. I can live with it if you can.
Yeah. And I'm the queen of shuffle, as you know. So every time it went through, it was a different order, which made it not ever feel stale.
Do you have favorites on this one? What would you say is your favorite track on the album?
I really like Rose Colored Boy. I would say Fake Happy and Idol Worship are two of the other standouts for me.
We'll give Fake Happy a listen. I'd say it's a really good mix of the heavier lyrical content.
Yeah.
And it's still got a little bit of an up-tempo vibe to it, but it's backed off a little bit to match the lyrical vibe.
Yeah, and this one too, especially lyrically, I think at some point or another, everyone can relate to this concept of not feeling your best self or not being comfortable in a situation, but having to put on that smile, put on that brave face, and just pretend that you are doing okay. So just lyrically, it resonated with me. I'm sure it resonates with others. And you have that immediate connection with her in this. You're like, yeah, I've been there. I know what that's like.
I love that line. If I smile with my teeth, I bet you'd believe me. There's something about that that just resonates so hard. It's such a succinct way of encapsulating the overall message of the song.
Yeah, and then she follows it up with, if I smile with my teeth, I bet Al believe me. So it's kind of a fake it till you make it attitude. It's just very relatable, and it's always nice. People turn to art for comfort and for those types of things, and to just have a sense that even though I feel a certain way, I know I'm not alone in the world. And an album like this, I think, is important, and especially in a time where mental health stuff is starting to become more publicized and have less of a stigma, and people are more comfortable talking about that and embracing it. An album like this, I think, helps even more. They're like, this is a public figure in the music industry and she's singing about something that I can relate to and other people I know can relate to.
Yeah, we've all faked being happy at a party.
Yeah. Or just anywhere.
Yeah.
Work.
I think even Haley herself is very, very open emotionally and very, wears her heart on her sleeve, and even even the negative emotions. I think when we saw them, this is like one of those Boston asshole things. Somebody in the crowd threw a beer bottle at her and she obviously got really pissed and kind of took it out on the whole audience a little bit, which fair enough. Like, that would make me hate a city if I played a show there and somebody threw a bottle at me. But you could just tell how much it threw her off. And,
yeah.
I mean, the show was great. It didn't affect them musically, but you could tell that she, like, didn't want to be there.
Yeah, it
that.
Took her a couple songs to get back into it. And there, she finished that song, called that guy out, and was like, don't throw a beer at me. Don't throw anything on the stage. Let's start over. Let's try this again. And even like a couple songs later, she's like, okay, Boston, like we're doing okay.
She had to warm up to us again.
Yeah.
So some clear trust issues
there. Yeah.
Let's put on Idle Hands. That's the other one you mentioned, right?
Yeah, Idol Worship.
Yikes. Of beer on my mind.
Yeah. this song, I think, is great just because everyone has their heroes up on a pedestal. And I think especially in 2017, we all realize how dangerous that can be. With this song, she's like, listen, I know that you're looking to me to be some figure in your life that guides you and something that can motivate you and someone you can look up to, but I'm not perfect. I have my flaws and you can't put that on me. And it's a very honest song, and she doesn't make you, as the listener, feel shitty about admiring her or admiring the band or looking up to them. She's just like, listen, I'm just a person just like you.
Don't have unrealistic expectations. Yeah, I love that. Especially, like you said, in the current climate. I've honestly been like pretty impressed for the most part how people have dealt with hearing bad things about people that they really admire. I'd say probably for me, none of them really hit me that hard, frankly. But probably Louis C.K. was the one that hit me the hardest, because I think everybody agrees that he's a brilliant stand-up comedian and writer. And we've watched his show for years, been going to see him live for years, watched his specials and all that. So that was probably the hardest one for me. But at the same time, rumors about him have been going around for years, so it wasn't like a huge shock or a huge surprise. But you do see a little bit of people defending it and saying, oh, let's wait for all the facts and all that kind of stuff. And usually only when it's somebody that they really love or admire, you know. But so you do see some of that. But I think for the most part, people were willing to say, that sucks, but like, fuck that guy. And I don't think there's any road to redemption for any of these people. I'm just saying, I'm glad that by and large people seem to be rejecting the urge to come to the defense of people that they like, in spite of the horrible things that they've allegedly done.
Yeah, you know this, and I talked about it a little bit on Conquest, but for the most part, any of the revelations that came out, I was like, oh, that sucks. I guess I don't like Louis C.K. anymore. I guess I don't see Kevin Spacey movies anymore. But then when allegations came out about Jesse Lacey, being a woman, I automatically like have to trust the victims, just because being in that place and coming from a woman's standpoint, you're like, I know that if this were me, I'd want people to believe me and I'd want my voice to be heard. So that was a really tough one for me, because he's one of my, was one of my like musical idols. So I wanted to wait. I waited until the acknowledgement came out, the statement came out, and I knew that it was going to be true. And I knew that he was going to apologize for it, and that it wasn't going to be just some fan making up a story. And that was really hard to reconcile. That was the first instance where I was like, man, now I got to really think about it.
The first instance where you could like feel the temptation to defend.
Right. Yeah. But I knew that I
was really impressed with how you dealt with it, because I know how much you love Brand New and how much you love Jesse Lacey.
Yeah.
And so you took it really hard, but to me that was a sign that you, like, the fact that you were mourning it instead of being in denial was an impressive show of intellectual honesty.
It sucks, but I think a lot of people had to do that this year, exercise that this year, because there is that temptation to want to separate the artist from the art. And sometimes you can do that depending on the scale of things. But at the end of the day, like, you need to be honest about it.
I think I'm on record on this show advocating for that, the ability to separate an artist from their art. It's all degrees, you know, like, it's way harder with Bill Cosby because of the things that he's done than it is with maybe Jesse Lacey, where he's done some really damaging, fucked up things, but maybe it's not kind of rape necessarily.
Right.
It's been more like emotional abuse. You know what I mean? So it's all degrees, and it's kind of a personal thing for everybody. And how much just emotionally do you now associate that person's music with the horrible things that they've done, or are you able to compartmentalize it enough that you can hear the song, love the art, hate the artist?
Yeah.
And, because if you own the album, you're not, you know, you've already supported them. You can't take that money away from them that you've already given them. So if you can, salvage the album, then I think more power to you.
Yeah.
But if you can't, then you just move on and you have that little period of mourning and you take it from there.
Yeah.
I think that journey is going to be different for everybody.
Absolutely.
And the line of what you might be able to forgive somebody for, or not forgive necessarily, but enough to still appreciate their art, is going to be different for everybody too. It's going to be based on your experience. Have you gone through some of that similar emotional abuse to a point where now that you know somebody's done that to other people, the way it's been done to you, you just can't look past it. So it's complex.
Very. Kind of building off of that, the song Grudges on this album, I think, is an interesting look at moving on from issues like that, where this song was written by Haley and Zach and Taylor, talking about embracing Zach and having him come back into the fold. And for anybody that isn't up to date with the band, or doesn't really
know the full story on this.
So when Josh and Zach left, they're the two brothers, they were in the band from the beginning. They left right after Brand New Eyes, and there was some tension on that tour, I guess.
I think Haley had dated Josh, if I'm remembering
right.
Yeah,
I think that's right.
And they had really religious upbringing, so I remember seeing like a post that the brothers had put out together after they had decided to leave the band. Basically that they felt like it had become all about Haley, and that they didn't think she was the person that she used to be, and from like a religious moral perspective, which immediately, just for me, based on my background, made me, if we're taking sides, made me take hers. I just have a similar philosophical religious journey where it's like, I'm not the church boy that you grew up with, and that has to be okay.
Right. They did cite a difference in beliefs as one of the reasons that they decided to part ways. And she, I think, is still like fairly Christian. She doesn't do drugs. She doesn't drink. She's not like a party girl.
I think it was definitely very much. Well, I think it's a couple things. There was always sort of an air of sexual morality about it, which, speaking as somebody who grew up in the church and had girlfriends who started seeing other people after you, it's easy to take jealousy and raise that up as like moral superiority.
Right.
Like what I was actually feeling when my ex started dating a new person wasn't moral outrage. It was just jealousy.
Yeah.
And that really, I saw that in the response that Josh had to some of the lyrical content that she wrote for Brand New Eyes and in that letter they wrote as they were departing. So
yeah, and it got pretty ugly, and they didn't talk for a very long time. And Zach even was like, I'll come back and do the drums for the album, but I'm not going to come back into the band. I'm not going to tour with you. I just will help you with this music. And then they obviously, through the writing process, began to mend fences and reconnect and re-spark their relationship creatively and personally. And now he's fully back in the fold. He was there when we saw them this summer. He's fully returned to the band.
That shows a lot of maturity. It shows a lot of
emotional
maturity for all of them. Yeah,
yeah, on both sides, and having be able to be like, you know what, we may have done some things that hurt each other a few years ago, but we can't hold on to that. We can't keep a grudge forever. Let's acknowledge what happened, try to move on from there, and just move forward.
And that's something I relate to so hard too, because I just have never been able to hold a grudge ever in my life. And I think even in the times when I've been tempted to, I'm too lazy to do it. It's too much work.
It is exhausting.
And nobody, part of it is just, you know, what's been done to you, because nobody's ever done anything to me that I would consider so unforgivable that I'd never consider reconciling or just letting it go. So I'm sure there's a line. We all have that line.
Right.
So I'm not saying there aren't people out there who have a right to hold a grudge, but for me, I've just never had an experience or a slight that's so egregious that it merits me wasting the energy on holding a grudge.
Yeah, and there definitely is a scale to it, and you know, what seems maybe insignificant to someone else is a mountain to you.
Yeah.
But being able to acknowledge to yourself, like, why is this so hurtful to me? Why was this so damaging to the relationship? Is this something that I can move on from and that I'm just kind of overreacting to? Or maybe last night it was terrible, but in the light of day, it's not as bad as I assumed. Or maybe it really was that damaging and detrimental. To be able to think honestly about it and weigh it with yourself and weigh it in the consequences of those relationships and your life on a grander scale is something that everybody has to do. And it's a part of growing up, because as a kid, you know, early 20s, it's easy to be like, you did this shitty thing to me, so I'm never going to talk to you again. But then as a 30 something, you're like, you know,
yeah,
it's not that bad. Like in the grand scheme of things, I can forgive that.
I think that's what's so exciting about this album too, is that, like we said, we talked a lot about the evolution of the band,
mm-hmm,
from a musical perspective, but the fact that you can also see an evolution from a lyrical content perspective is
exactly
also really cool. And the fact that we kind of grew up with this band, like our from our teens to our late 20s, have been listening and following this band, and we could relate to it back then. I maybe can't relate to a song like Misery Business as much as I,
yeah,
could back then, maybe. But it, I just love any time you feel like you've grown up with a band and they've grown up with you, and now you're still connecting with the music that they're putting out, both lyrically and musically. I think that's really exciting.
Yeah. She actually, Haley, addressed, so speaking of Misery Business, there's a line in it where she says, "Once a whore, you're nothing more. I'm sorry, that will never change." And she's actually gotten like a lot of shit about that lately, because it was the 10th anniversary of that album. So people were revisiting it, and she was like, "You know what? Yeah, that was a really ignorant thing for me to say. I was 18 when I wrote that line. I was in like a bad emotional state. I was jealous of a situation that was going on. It was..."
That's again that moral outrage.
Yeah.
Or that the jealousy masquerading as moral outrage.
Exactly.
Thing.
And she's like, you know, people can change. I've obviously experienced that. I've seen that in other people, and I can apologize for it in retrospect. But at the time, like, that's how I was feeling. I wrote it, but obviously I was wrong. So it's just interesting that people can still say, like, that's who I was at that time, but I have evolved now, and I'm a different artist, essentially.
Well, I think that's probably a good place to leave it. I think grudges, yeah, is kind of the perfect way to sum up that musical evolution and what's so great and compelling about this album. And do you have any last thoughts on it before we transition to our drinking game?
I don't think so. I just, it's a great record. Check it out if you haven't already.
I'll echo that. I think it's such a strong album, like I said, both lyrically and musically. And I'd say if you have loved Paramore but have been putting off checking out this album, do it. It may not be for you, but I honestly think as a longtime Paramore fan, it really does hold up and is really cool to see them doing something different but doing it just as well. And if you didn't like their old stuff, check this one out because it is very different. So maybe this is where you can start connecting with it. All right, let me crack this next beer and we'll get into this. What I've done for today's drinking game, since our theme is album of the year, I'm actually going to play a series of 9 songs, and you have to tell me for each one, did it win Song of the Year at the Grammys?
Okay. I'm probably not going to be good at this.
I think it's going to be pretty hard. But it's 50-50, so you know, you're just guessing anyway. Really simple. If you get it right, I have to drink. If you get it wrong, you have to drink. Here's your first one. You ready?
Okay. So this is fun. I'm going to say that this did win Song of the Year.
Take a drink. We Are Young from this same album. I think it's from the same album, One Song of the Year, but not this song.
You tricksy hobbits.
All right, you ready for the next one?
Yeah.
And that's the thing. You never can tell with any of these. They could have been Song of the Year.
Yeah.
It could have been another song off the album. And for a couple of these, I was surprised that it was this song off of the album and not the other. All right, here's song number 2.
Can't really hear it.
Give it a second to kick in. This is Norah Jones's Come Away With Me.
I'm going to say that this did not win Song of the Year.
You're right. But don't know why I did.
Oh.
I'll take a drink. All right, here's your next one. Do you recognize it? This is an older one. We're taking it back a little bit further. I think you'll get it once her voice comes in.
Is this Whitney?
No.
No. Oh, Tina Turner.
Yeah. You know the song?
What's Love Got to Do With It?
It is, yeah. What do you think, yes or no?
I'm going to say yes.
You're right.
Yeah, this song is huge.
So let's be good about keeping score. You got 2 out of the 3 so right. far.
This is so stupid, but it definitely had to win.
It was. I was looking through the list and I was like, "You motherfuckers."
Santana, it kind Rob of Thomas, like
it makes the Grammys
together?
Like absolutely meaningless that this one song of the year.
They just base it on like single sales.
I know it's definitely not based off sales. It's I think it's like the Oscars where it's like a panelist of professionals.
Old white men.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Anyway.
Oh man. You only hear the song at the supermarket now.
That's so true. And when I jokingly bust it out whenever someone's like, "It's a hot one." All right, next one.
Oh, Stevie.
Nope.
It's not?
No. Who's the other piano man?
Oh, all right. I can't really hear very well.
Yeah, it's pretty quiet.
That's
the thing is, like, because of the loudness wars, like, volumes of songs change over the time, so it's hard to control for that.
I'm going to say that
it's Just the Way You Are by Billy Joel.
I'm going to say no. There's it something.
Is.
Oh, really?
Take a drink.
I was going to say probably something else from the same album. We never could have come this far. I took the good times. I'll take the bad times. I take you just the way.
All right, next one. So let's see. You're down. I think you're at
3-2.
3-2. Yeah. I'm going to skip ahead on this one a little bit.
Is this just Paul Simon or?
It's Simon and Garfunkel, the boxer, a.k.a. Lie Will Lie.
I'm going to say no.
You're right. Bridge Over Troubled Water was the song off this album that did win Song of the Year.
I always forget that's them.
All right, so you have 4 out of 7 at this point, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you need one more to win. Here's your next one.
Okay, so this is Eric Clapton. I think this is Babyface in this one too, right?
He wrote it.
Okay. I'm going to say yes, it did win Song of the Year.
It did.
This song was everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Change the world. All right, so you officially won. We'll just play out the last couple. Woo-hoo. Just for fun.
Okay. So this is U2.
Mm-hmm.
I was obsessed with this song.
I forgot that about you.
Yeah, I had a very brief but intense U2 phase. I'm going to say that you would expect Beautiful Day to be the one from this record that won, but it was this one.
It was Beautiful Day.
Ah, fuck.
All right, so take your drink.
Okay.
And then you've got your final one here.
Johnny Mayer. There are so many hits off of this one. I'm going to say no.
It was.
Really?
And that it actually made sense to me. I didn't remember this winning Song of the Year, but I think it probably is the most accessible song on that album.
That's
and
true.
Was massive at
yeah,
the time.
Yeah.
Did you ever see that... that video he did, I don't even remember what it was. It was like some YouTube video or something that he did, basically making fun of himself, which was great.
Oh, yeah.
He wore like a mascot costume outside one of his own shows yeah. and was like talking shit about himself to like people who were there to see him. And like there's one where he did a focus group and he's like, I'm trying to write that song. I'm trying to write like a follow-up to Daughters. And he's like, so I want you all to just close your eyes. I'm going to start playing a song and I want you to raise your hand as soon as you're going to cry. Because that's how I know it's like a good song or whatever. It's just these girls like
and
crying
like
immediately.
Yeah.
I think he's a really like naturally funny and charming guy.
Yeah, he posted a picture on Instagram yesterday where he was wearing these really like high waisted tuxedo pants, and he was like Kylo Ren challenge.
That's so good.
Yeah.
My favorite John Mayer story is he was on some talk show and he played a crank call recording that he made of himself. He called, I don't even remember what the setup was for the call, but the person was like, who is this? And he was like, John Johnson, Jack Johnson. That's always stuck with me. I think that's so fucking clever. And it was like at the height of that, all that like college pop where
yeah.
it was like, him and Jack Johnson would always be mentioned in like the same
yeah.
sentence. So anyway, well, congratulations. You won again. You don't get a prize because you can't have 3 copies of Drinking Buddies, the Drinking Man's Thinking Game. I don't know what
you
do with it.
If you say so.
So I think that wraps us up. Do you want to just do you have anything to plug for yourself?
Sure. I have a podcast on the Wasted Minds website, wasted-minds.com.
Did you forget what it was?
No, I was transitioning into like the Wasted Minds family. That's what I've been referring to it as. We didn't really talk
no,
about
like
that,
it.
But
It does feel like a family.
Yeah. So my podcast with my other host, Chinmo, is called Conquest. We cover conventions in the New England area, some pop culture events. We talk about different kinds of fandoms, what we're fans of, what our guests are fans of. We just did our favorites of 2017 episode, gearing up for the new year. So yeah, you can check us out on the wasted-minds.com website, Conquest. We're also a Conquest podcast on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
It's a great show. I think it's great. You guys always do such a good job of getting great guests who you know will have create like a stimulating conversation about your different topics. And you really do cover everything. I think there's something for everybody on that show. So you guys just constantly do a great job with it. So I couldn't recommend it more. I'll just briefly plug the Wasted Minds website, wasted-minds.com, and specifically the Drinking Buddies Kickstarter campaign, which we'll be rolling out this spring. I can say this spring now, not next spring. Spring of 2018. So if you go to wasted-minds.com/Kickstarter, you can sign up for our mailing list, and we'll keep you in the loop on all the latest happenings. We're going to do a couple of, we're going to be at a couple of gaming conventions this spring, so we'll keep you in the loop on that, and we'll let you know as soon as the campaign is live. I think that's everything, Kat. Any final thoughts on Album of the Year 2017 in general?
I don't think so.
All right. Well, then, to everybody listening at home or in your car or wherever you might be listening, here's to you.